Okay, I'll go ahead and call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:11 a.m. on Friday, May 15th, 2026. And present today, we have Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, and then Representative Moore and Representative Kutcher Schrage, Representative Kutcher Josephson, Representative Jimmy, I believe. Are you online, Representative Jimmy? And she should be calling in, so I'll check back. We have Representative Bynum, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, myself, Co-Chair Foster, and always, as always, if folks can mute their cell phones. And we have four items on the agenda today, and we'll take up amendments for both SB 140, that's the Fire Station Grant Program Bill, as well as Senate Bill 29, that's the Big Game Commercial Services Board. And then we'll introduce Senate Bill 164, that's the Eliminate Tax Discounts, as well as House Bill 138, Behavioral Health Crisis Surcharge and Fund. So first up, we have Senate Bill 140, that's the Fire Station Grant Program. Just a reminder also, we do have floor session today, and there'll be meetings that I think we all are going to at 10 o'clock, and so we've got about 45 minutes. And so going back to the Fire Station Grant Program, we've had invited and public testimony and reviewed the fiscal note. We do have four amendments, and if we could have, Ms. Margot Yunberg, staff to Senator Stevens, come up, and if you could just give us a very, very brief recap of what the bill does, and then we'll jump right into the amendments.
Good morning. Margot Yunberg, staff to Senator Stedman. SB 140 would establish a matching grant program within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, which would provide funding for up to 50% of the total project cost for the construction and renovation of fire stations.
Great. Thank you. Representative Jimmy, are you online? Okay, she has amendment number one, so we're going to roll her amendments, and we'll go to the next amendment, and that, I believe, is Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment two.
Okay, object. Representative Hannon.
So this amendment adds components to the Fire Station Grant Program that are very similar to provisions that exist in the Municipal Harbor Grant Program. It caps the grant amount at $10 million, and it instructs DCCED to create a panel to evaluate and prioritize fire station grant applications. The panel of evaluators must include the director of the Division of Community Regional Affairs or their designee and at least one additional department employee, an architect or engineer registered in the state, two members of a statewide association of fire chiefs who do not have fire station project grant applications under consideration in that grant cycle. It instructs the department to establish priorities for the award of fire station project grants. Those priorities must include at least the following: public safety and emergency factors, the extent to which the grant recipient can demonstrate sufficient revenue to operate and maintain the fire station in the future, a preventative maintenance plan for the fire station, adequate insurance for the replacement cost of the fire station. This amendment allows the department to suggest modifications to project applications for cost savings or to better serve the public interest. And if the grant applicant agrees with the modifications, the department may award the grant as modified.
Okay, and Senator Stedman and Ms. Yunberg, if you'd like to come up give us your thoughts on the amendments. Senator Stedman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members. I think when we take a look at, there's several amendments. We're working on amendment number one.
Senator Stedman, unfortunately, we don't have Representative Nelly Jimmy here right now, so we jumped right into amendment number two.
Okay, number two. Okay, thank you. So I should identify myself. Bert Stedman, a senator representing District A, all the islands in Southeast, with Yakutat and Hyder included from the mainland for diversification. But I think Representative Hannon put a lot of thought in this, and I think it actually put some improvements on the grant program. I think when we look through these amendments, Mr. Chairman, they're collectively we'll come up with something that works. And I don't see big issues with this amendment.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I worked closely with Representative Hannon on this to try to make sure we were addressing all of the comments from the previous committee meeting on this item. I think that we hopefully captured all those items. This is tailored and really reflects similar programs, specifically the Harbor Facilities Grant Program, and trying to make sure that we're covering all those areas. So I'll support the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion?
I move my objection.
Okay, the objection is removed, and hearing no further objection, I assume you, Representative Hannon, did you want to do any wrap-up at all? I'll object for purposes of wrap-up.
I would just note, because I've had a couple people ask, expanding on the creation of the program, it's not funding it. So somebody said, how much money are you putting into the grant program and when is the app? So this is creating it statutorily. An appropriation to fund it would be on the next legislature to so there is no fiscal note to the bill. We haven't worked the fiscal note system to get it to zero. It would be creating it statutorily so that a future legislature could fund a program in the future. And I did want to make sure and acknowledge that Representative Bynum and I had lots of conversations, and my staff worked with his office and with Senator Stedman to make sure that we weren't diverting it from his intent, but trying to put the same sort of framework that has existed in the Harbor Grants program in place. Thanks.
Any further comments? Okay, I'm going to remove my objection. Hearing no further objections, Amendment number 2 has been adopted. Representative Jimmy, are you there? Okay, I don't hear Representative Jimmy, so we'll go over to, actually, looks like she has the following three amendments. Representative Stapp, did you have a comment now?
I was just saying all the rest of the amendments are hers, Co-Chair.
Correct. Let's take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 9:20 a.m. And Representative Jimmy, sounds like you may be online now.
Yes, good morning. I'm online now.
Okay. And so we currently have four amendments on Senate Bill 140, which is the forestation bill. You have amendments 1, 3, and 4. We've taken care of amendment number 2, so we're down to your amendments. Would you like to offer amendment number 1?
I'd like to offer amendment 1 and defer to my staff, Keaton Miller.
Okay. I am looking at the audience. I don't see Keenan. We'll take a brief at ease.
Object, here. Just to put it on the record.
Okay, we do have an objection. We'll take a brief at ease. Finance back on record at 9:22 a.m. Representative Jimmy, your staff may be presenting on another bill in another committee. Are you able to explain the amendments? And if not, then we'll come back to it later.
So basically, Amendment 1 is, I believe I have another staff there, Hayden.
My staff just popped into your office and nobody is available to present.
Then I will go ahead and withdraw Amendments 1 through 4.
Okay. What we're going to do is maybe Senator Stedman, if you'd like to maybe just make a few comments. And then I think when you come back, we'll try to get through this. So Senator Stedman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we looked at the libraries and matching grant fund, the harbor matching grant funds, you know, especially harbors, they're waterfront towns, normally, you know, fairly affluent from multiple directions. Libraries are a little different. You know, get some libraries in very small towns. And looking at the concept on Amendment 1, even though it's been withdrawn, might be something for the Finance Committee to consider, because it would facilitate very small communities, some of the little villages, some protection in it for fire equipment. I think that's something that maybe the committee could talk about and see if we can't come up with something. I think some of the other concepts broaden the scope of the harbor matching grant, or the fire hall matching grant fund. They're pretty broad. You may want to hopefully be careful with that, because it starts to deviate the program. But clearly the first one I can see where there would be villages that have, you know, need very small buildings or facilities to keep a little fire truck or some kind of fire response equipment. I don't think we should exclude them, per se. Try to make it fair around the state.
Okay, thanks. We'll go to a Representative Stapp, and then I'll go ahead and set the bill aside. Representative
Stapp? Yeah, I mean, Co-Chair Foster, I kind of feel like we should just move the bill. We did amendments. I'll defer to Co-Chair Shragi, maybe, or I don't know why we would keep the bill in the committee when we have 500 things through the chair.
I think this bill is in its last stop. I think we've got a couple days. So if we just wait a few hours, I have no problem taking this up in a few hours. Representative Bynum?
For the record, I was going to object to Representative Nelly withdrawing amendments 1 through 4.
Co-Chair Foster, I think we could move this along and then take amendments up on the floor to the extent there's a desire to incorporate further amendments. I just know we're kind of in the final stages here of session. And
thank you.
It's a good bill I'd like to see.
The argument that we hear all the time is bill shouldn't go to the floor.
This is different.
Well, this is where we do the work. And so I don't think just waiting a few hours is gonna kill the bill. I think it's still going to get through. So I'm going to go ahead and set SB 140 aside. Representative Hannon.
Can I? So in my reading of Amendment 1, I'm not sure that it's a material significant difference, because the grant program doesn't require it. It does allow renovation. So if the concern is fire station or fire protection.
Representative Hannon, we don't have the amendment before us anymore.
I understand, but if we're going to, you know, I guess I'm saying I don't know that her amendment changes if it were considered and adopted, that her goal is to, it appears to me, make sure that if you're not building a full-blown fire station with four bays for trucks, mm-hmm. that you're still eligible to apply. And it appears to me, when you look at the grant program, that's covered, because it says fire safety, fire stations and renovation, construction and renovation. So
I am setting aside SB 140, and we'll come back to it later. And we're taking a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record. I'm setting aside SB 140. So we're going to go to the next bill here. And that is SB 29. That is the Big Game Commercial Services Board bill. And we heard this bill two times. We had invited testimony and public testimony. We reviewed the fiscal note. We have two amendments. If we could have Senator Bjorkman as well as his staff, Ms. Savea Bieber, if you'd like to come to the table, put yourself on the record and provide a brief recap of the bill. Senator Bjorkman, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Foster. A brief recap of the bill. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. Senate Bill 29 simply puts into statute what is already happening in the budget by placing in statute an executive administrator for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. That executive administrator is responsible for maintaining and administering 29 or more different guide license tests for different guide areas around the state. Is a highly specialized position with specialized local knowledge that is specific to Alaska. And so having that position secured in statute is important for the longevity and effectiveness of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Tomaszewski, would you like to introduce amendment number one?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment one.
Okay. Object. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and committee. Amendment one is so similar to the bill, you could almost just take the name and change them out. The Board of Dental Examiners has requested an executive director. Currently, the board has to review and approve each individual application, which leaves little availability for completing other board priorities. In 2025, they issued 286 new licenses. The executive director salary would be arranged 23, just like in the bill for the board for the other position. Currently, we have a licensing specialist 3 in that board of the dental examiners, and they are at a range 17. So the added cost is simply the delta between the 17 and the 23 between the two. The cost is absorbed by license fees. Currently, there are 3,670 active licenses on this that the board regulates and takes care of. The board is unable to delegate the powers to a licensing specialist 3, but with an executive director, they could delegate authority to allow the approval of straightforward applications and increase their role in the regulations review process. This would streamline licensures to keep Alaska's dental standards up to date and allow board members the ability to focus on board work. The types of licenses the board issues are vast. There are 22 different types of licenses they oversee, and with an executive director position on that board, they will be able to function much more efficiently and accurately. And I would hope you would support it. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Bjorkman, any comments?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm relatively unfamiliar with the need for this position. I think it would be more appropriate to have the Director of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licenses from the Department of Commerce, Communities, and Economic Development, Mrs. Sylvan Robb, if she could come and speak to it. I think that would be more appropriate.
Ms. Robb, if you can put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. To the Chair, Representative Tomaszewski did a good job summarizing the complexity of the work that the Board of Dental Examiners does. There are almost 3,700 licenses, permits, and certifications issued by this board, and they have a, as I say, a great deal of complexity between the sedation permits as well as 12 different kinds of specialty licenses for dentists. And so the ability to delegate additional work to an executive administrator would assist the board in achieving its goals.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Galvin and Hannon.
Thank you. This is a question for the sponsor of the underlying bill. Is there any concern that adding in a completely different board would bog down getting this passed? Are you concerned about that, or would this be something you would consider a friendly amendment?
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, through the chair, to Rep. Galvin. I specifically do not have concerns. However, just for full transparency, this is a bill that is currently in the House Labor and Commerce Committee.
Follow-up, Representative Galvin?
I don't have a follow-up.
Okay. I'll go to Representative Hannon, then Josephson.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And Senator Bjorkman, I guess, has started to answer that. But my question, I was going to address Director Rob and whether the Board of Dental Examiners have pursued getting an executive administrator, because as you've said before, there's 21 professional boards. Six of them currently have executive administrators set out in statute because of the complexity of the administration of their licensure types. And so I'm trying to figure out whether dental examiners is one of those that either through audits or recommendation from that board have been pursuing that or not. So there's a bill. Now, Senator Bjorkman didn't mention whether that's a Senate bill or a House bill in Labor and Commerce dealing with dental examiners, but I'm interested in that backstory because I don't want to just pluck all 21 of those professional licensures boards into executive administration. But if the case is made that it's better to have it, and they do self-fund through fees. Those are two different scenarios. So maybe it's Representative Tomaszewski.
In the queue, I've got you've got probably a separate question, Representative Josephson.
I don't.
Oh, you don't? Okay, Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I'll take a pass.
Okay. Representative Galvin, was that a separate question?
It's a very short question. We learned from the audits, I think now it's 2 days ago, about how much funds are in each leftover. And I guess what I'm thinking about is in this bill, the underlying bill before the amendment, we know that there are funds, GGF, that will likely come from the licensing fees. They're already, the fees are high enough to cover it. And my question is, in looking at this amendment, is that similarly well endowed to take care of this extra cost?
Ms. Robb?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, the dental board is in a good place financially, and additionally, it has a large licensing base. It's not one of those tiny programs that we're spreading a cost across a very small number of people. Thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. To address the question prior, and with the bill that's in Labor and Commerce Committee, this is actually just one section of that bill. There's three sections to it. And the other two, one addresses the education process of the hygienist, and the other one is part of that bill that says deals with dentists who are currently operating a practice without a license. It deals with how to work with that. So those parts are not in this amendment. This amendment is simply exactly like the bill in front of us, giving executive administrator for a big game commercial services. This is basically the same thing. So this amendment only takes a portion of that, one section of that bill that is currently in Labor Commerce Committee.
Okay, I've got reps. Representative.
Could I just follow up? Because I'm still trying to get an understanding.
Yeah, sure, Representative Hannon.
Is that a House bill or a Senate bill?
Who's got the Ms. Bieber?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, it's a House bill. It's Representative Tomaszewski is the sponsor.
And that's, for the record, maybe Ms. Bieber, can you put yourself on the record?
Oh, for the record, Savea Bieber, staff to Senator Bjorken.
Okay, Representative Hannon.
So is the creation of their executive administrator been one of the recommendations to move them into that status of from an audit, from the department, from their board?
Ms. Robb?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it does not come from an audit recommendation. It is from the Board of Dental Examiners.
Okay. A recommendation to create an executive administrative position for it in statute, like these others.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, correct.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. So it always comes down to if they're willing to – this is sort of the self-tie. If they're willing to pay for it, then my concerns go away, and I'm just making sure that that's the case.
You got Representative Stapp and then Bynum. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Foster, I mean, I guess this is my thoughts. If they want an administrator, they're going to pay for it out of their own licensing fees. I think it's relatively innocuous and they'll probably support it. I mean, I'm sure the dental board would probably benefit from their own staff. So that's all.
Okay. And just so folks know, floor is now at 11, so we'll probably go just before 10:30. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman. Again, can you clarify, were you neutral on this amendment?
Senator Bjorkman.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion? Seeing none, wrap up, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So this is a simple amendment. The Board of Dental Examiners has requested this executive administrator position, and I'm just happy to be able to, you know, hopefully grant their request. So I appreciate your support on it. Thank you.
Okay. And Representative Hannon, you have the objection. Do you maintain?
I remove my objection.
It's removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number one has been adopted, and that takes us to amendment number two. Representative Briefides. Okay, House Finance back on record. We are currently working on SB 29, and Representative Allard has amendment number 2.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. This amendment just says that the executive
Allard, can you move the amendment?
Amendment number 2, I apologize.
Okay, and I'll object for purpose of discussion. Representative Allard?
This amendment just says the executive administrator must have relevant professional, administrative, regulatory, or legal experience. The board shall establish by regulation the duties and the minimum qualifications for position of executive administrator. I was told that this isn't conducive with the time frame that they don't want in regulations because it will take a year to adapt. So I will go ahead and withdraw my amendment.
Amendment number 2 has been withdrawn. So are there any further questions for the sponsor of the bill? Seeing none, if it is the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Shragi.
Yes, I move SB 29, Work Order 34-LS0287A, out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. House Finance Committee authorizes legislative legal to make any technical and/or conforming changes as necessary.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, SB 29, which is version 34-LS0287/A, does move out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And House Finance is authorized, authorizing Ledge Legal to make technical and conforming changes as necessary. So with that, Senator Bjorkman, thank you again. I guess I think the last time we saw you, I asked if there are any parting words, but maybe we'll give you another opportunity here.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Okay. If folks can sign the committee reports, and we're going to have the next presenter come right up. So just as I mentioned earlier, and I'll say it again, about floor is now at 11 a.m., so we'll probably go till just before 10:30, so that gives us about 45 minutes. And so with that, I'd like to invite up Senator Merrick, as well as her staff, Ms. Sorsha Hazelton, if you'd like to come up to the table and give us an introduction. And the intent is to open it up for questions. We do have public testimony. We do have a fiscal note, so we should be able to get through all of those, and we'll set an amendment deadline. So with that, Senator Merrick, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs Foster, Josephson, and Shragi, and members of the esteemed House Finance Committee. For the record, I'm Kelly Merrick, Senator for District L in beautiful Chugiak, Eagle River. We really appreciate you hearing this bill today. This is the itty-bitty tax bill. It isn't creating a new tax. It's eliminating tax discounts and deductions that not all taxpayers receive. So where did this revenue recapturing idea come from? It was drafted last year when everyone was doging and the whole country seemed focused on government efficiencies. Our constituents want a more streamlined, cost-effective government. They want every corner of the state government audited and improved. This is a step in that direction because we already do this. Our nonpartisan Legislative Finance Division, in cooperation with the Department of Revenue, publishes the Indirect Expenditure Report every other year. If you're new to this report, this riveting document is hundreds of pages analyzing areas where we are foregoing revenue, department by department, program by program. Legislative Finance looks at whether these discounts are being used and whether they're still serving their legislative intent. Our goal with Senate Bill 164 is to take several so far non-controversial recommendations from Legislative Finance, reassess the programs, and have the conversation whether they still serve a purpose or if we need these drops in our revenue bucket instead. The Department of Revenue has estimated Senate Bill 164 could raise nearly $500,000 a year for the state, and money that could be included in a capital budget to fund sexual assault examination kits, vehicle repairs to DPS, or education. My staff, Sorsha Hazelton, can walk through the selections we've made, but at the end of the day, it's a simple tax bill asking the question, do we want to keep doing what we are doing? Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Great. Thank you. And speaking of co-chair, I just wanted to recognize Senator Merrick as a former co-chair of the House, and we served together for 2 years. So good to see you back in the room. Do we have any Ms. Hazelton, if you can put yourself on the record.
Sorsha Hazelton, staff to Senator Merrick.
Okay. And if you'd like to, did you have some?
I can, Mr. Chair, or I can just take questions.
Okay. Do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Ms. Hazleton, your senator referenced, does it meet the original and legislative purpose? So could you walk us through why we at some point gave a discount for timely filing credit? Is that the nexus of what it was? And I assume that's back in the analog days when there was only the option to file the papers, and that perhaps that's why we were encouraging timely filing. And I would guess that 99% of our tax filings are now done electronically.
Ms. Hazleton.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. Yes, most of the items in this bill were added. Each of the items are slightly different, but generally the credits for filing taxes on time or discounts were given for allowing accounting changes when the legislature instituted new taxes.
Further, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. I'm specifically interested in the cigarette stamp tax. Could you give us a little more history of that and see if our knowledge of our costs of tobacco to our society and our tax overall budget justify giving discounts to people who pay their cigarette taxes on a timely fashion?
Ms. Hazleton?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, Sections 3 and 4 of the bill eliminate the cigarette stamp tax discount. In 2003, the legislature included this discount to defray the costs of purchasing the new equipment required for stamping cigarettes. At the time, the machine cost $75,000, and the discount was up to $50,000. These stamps are affixed to acknowledge that taxes have been paid on the cigarettes. Today, the machines have been purchased and have been operating for more than 20 years. Legislative Finance recommended terminating as the stamps should be considered a cost of doing business when selling cigarettes in Alaska. There are 8 companies benefiting from this discount to the tune of roughly $40,000 per year per company. These sections recover roughly $308,000 annually.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting this. Always love these new ideas. In this case, I have a question with regard to the motor fuel. I see that it looks like, I'm trying to sort through your sponsor statement and the bill itself and what I'm seeing in statute. There's something related to motor fuel that is only for non-highway use. Is that where you're finding this? It's a refund of the motor fuel tax for non-highway use. Was that considered? That's in section 43.40.030.
Ms. Hazleton?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, the bill does not determine the types of motor fuel. Everything that counts as motor fuel, this is included in the discount they currently receive. So it's any company that currently receives the discount for timely filing. We're just removing that. It is the definition of motor fuel does not care about the type of vehicle.
Okay, thank you. I'll sort through this a little bit more. I see that there's a lot of different kinds that are in statute, but you're not specifying that in here. So it could be aviation, watercraft, whatever it might be. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the sponsor or staff, so eliminating a timely filing credit, is there a late penalty fee for folks who don't pay their taxes on time?
Ms. Hazleton?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, yes, there is. And these companies would already be paying it if they pay late. This just allows them to pay less for paying on time. And so we're removing that, and they will pay all of the taxes they owe the state on time, or else they will pay more.
So follow up. So it doesn't touch anything having to do with the penalty afterwards. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on SB 164. And if folks watching would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Seeing none. Again, if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And so I'll go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 164. And we do have a fiscal note. Mr. Dan Stickle, can you put yourself on the record and walk us through the fiscal note?
Dan Stickle, Chief Economist. Hi, this is Dan Stickle, Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue. So we do have a fiscal note, control code capital F, T, C, capital S, capital T. That was published on March 4th, 2026. So we are not anticipating any additional costs or reduction to costs to implement the bill. We are anticipating a increase in state revenues of $467,700 per year. And the fiscal note has additional detail on how that breaks down between the four indirect expenditures implemented by this bill.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions on the fiscal note or questions for the sponsor? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And I love this bill, and it's not my intention to make any changes, but you did say, and I have not read this riveting indirect expenditure report, and you said you selected four of the items. Give me a ballpark of how many other ones that I assume you chose ones that would likely have one, no operational increase to execute and would produce revenue and but how many more ways for us to doge through that report and capture some revenue are there?
Ms. Hazelton?
To the Chair, to Representative Hannon, the indirect expenditure report specifically pulled from in this bill is from 2021. Each report covers different departments, divisions, and programs. They don't do the whole state at once. There have been two more recent reports than this one. Specifically, the 2021 report covers 136 credits, exemptions, discounts, and deductions with the Department of Commerce, Fish and Game, Health, Labor, and Revenue. There were 45 recommendations for termination or review and reconsideration from the Legislative Finance Division in the 2021 report, and we selected only four of them.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further, Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the Chair, Senator Merrick, thank you for being here. Just really quick, I have not had an opportunity to look at this report. You know, I don't have that midnight reading opportunity. So, one of the things I think about when we look at this and we talk about efficiency is that these programs were put in place to try to accomplish something, or I'd hope that when they were put in, they were trying to accomplish anything. Does the report really talk about how effective these credits were with making sure people were actually filing? Did we see any response from these going into law? Or would we anticipate there would be a decline in timely filing if these were repealed? Did the report go into that?
Ms. Hazelton?
Through the Chair, to Representative Bynum. Many of these credits are put in place more than 20 years ago, and I would imagine that a business has already developed a process for timely filing. But I would direct whether or not the Division of Tax has seen any sort of improvement or not since these were implemented to the Department of Revenue.
Thank you.
I don't think there's anybody on the DOR, at least for this bill that's here. Any further questions? Okay. Seeing none, what I'd like to do is go ahead and set an amendment deadline for the bill. It looks like a fairly simple bill, so we'll set a short amendment deadline that is going to be for tomorrow, Saturday, May 16 at 5 p.m. Again, setting the amendment deadline for Senate Bill 164, Saturday, May 16 at 5 p.m. And or if nobody has amendments, no amendments. Okay. If there is an interest, certainly it's up to the will of the committee if you'd like to move the bill. And so if there is an interest in that, I would entertain a motion. Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I would move. Excuse me as I drop a piece of paper. I move Senate Bill 164, Work Order 34-LS0763/I, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. House Finance Committee authorizes legislative legal to make any technical and conforming changes necessary.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 164, which is version 34-LS0763/I, moves out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if there are any technical or conforming changes, then House Finance authorizes those by Ledge Legal to make those. And so with that, congratulations for a very speedy hearing. Senator Merrick, I'm very used to having you as my co-chair here. So do you have any comments?
Just appreciate the committee's time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. If folks can please sign the committee report, looks like we're teed up for the next bill. And so we're going to jump right into that. And we have House Bill 138. Next, that is the Behavioral Health Crisis Surcharge and Fund. And I'd like to invite up Representative Jimmy Staff, Hayden Johnson, as well as Rachel, last name?
Gunn.
Thank you. And if you can put yourselves on the record, we do have available for questions Jen Carson, Director of the Division of Behavioral Health. After we have an introduction of the bill, we do have, some invited testifiers. We have three invited testifiers. We have, it looks like, two or three fiscal notes, two maybe. And then we'll go from there. So with that, if you can put yourself on the record.
So hello. For the record, my name is Hayden Johnson, and I'm here to present House Bill 138. So we have the highest rate of suicide in the nation and youth suicide in the nation, the second highest rate of adult suicide. We've also seen a dramatic increase in Alaska's opioid deaths in recent years. So we're presenting House Bill 138, which would establish a 98-cent monthly surcharge on each wireline and wireless telephone and creates a designated behavioral health services fund. At 98 cents per line, House Bill 138 is estimated to generate between $6 to $8 million in sustainable funding. The money would be used to not only fund the 988 call line, but all other behavioral health services such as mobile crisis response teams and crisis stabilization centers, along with the culturally appropriate outreach needed for our diverse state. The proposed surcharge would support the critical 988 service hotline, and these services would be essential for providing immediate assistance to individuals experiencing mental health crises, reduce the burden on emergency departments and emergency response services and the correctional system. These funds would also facilitate the retention of behavioral health professionals that are so deeply needed throughout our state and offer specialized training and support public awareness campaigns to destigmatize mental health issues. Furthermore, adopting the behavioral health crisis telecommunications surcharge in House Bill 138 would be a critical and much needed step to strengthening Alaska's mental health infrastructure. If it is the will of the committee, I could go through the sectional analysis.
Mr. Hayden Johnson.
Yes. Sorry about that. Okay, so Section 1 establishes Article 5 under Title 44 of the Revenue and Taxation Chapter 98 Miscellaneous Provisions to establish the Behavioral Health Crisis Services Surcharge in AS 43.98.080. Subsection A establishes a telecom fee of 98 cents per month for each wireless and wireline telephone. Subsection B provides that the telephone company shall impose the surcharge to each customer with a billing address in the state and collect the surcharge from the customer. Customers may not be subject to more than one surcharge per line, and a customer with more than 100 lines are subject to the surcharge on no more than 100 lines. Subsection C specifies that the telephone company shall clearly state the surcharge on the monthly telephone bill. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska may not consider this surcharge as revenue of the telephone company and has no jurisdiction over the behavioral health crisis services. Subsection D specifies that a telephone company shall readmit the amount collected to the department no later than 60 days after the end of the month in which the surcharge was collected. The telephone company may deduct and retain the greater 1% of the collected amount, or $150, to support the administration of the surcharge collection. Subsection E states that the telephone company is not obligated to take legal action to enforce collection of the surcharge. However, if the telephone company attempts to collect an unpaid debt from the customer, the company shall also collect the unpaid surcharge. If a customer pays only a portion of the bill, the surcharge amount shall be prorated accordingly. The telephone company shall also provide an annual report to the department with detailed information on customer non-payment amounts. The telephone company is not liable for uncollected surcharges. Subsection F, the department may require an annual audit of the telephone company's records concerning the collection and readmittance of the surcharge. And subsection G establishes the Behavioral Health Crisis Services Fund in the general fund. The Department of Administration shall account for this fund separately. The legislature may appropriate the annual estimated balance of the fund to the Department of Health for specific behavioral health crisis response purposes outlined in subsections 1 through 7, including support for the crisis call center, mobile crisis teams, crisis stabilization centers, workforce development, training, education, and other services. Subsection H states that nothing in this section creates a dedicated fund. Subsection I includes the definitions for local exchange access line, local exchange telephone company, wireless telephone company, and wireline telephone. And then finally, Section 2 provides for an effective date of July 1st, 2026.
Okay. Do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Staff and Galvin?
I'll defer to Rep. Galvin real quick while I get my thoughts in order, if that's okay, Co-Chair Foster.
Representative Galvin?
Okay. Well, thank you, first of all. This is such an important piece of the puzzle of mental health that I appreciate very much your work on this. I have a question, and it's really more related to the 98-cent piece. How did you come up with that number, and how do we know if that's enough? That's the primary question I have.
Yes, so Mr. Johnson. through the chair to Representative Galvin, it costs roughly $4 to $5 million to fund the 988 call line. Because this fund's more than just the 988 call line, it was determined that the target revenue of $6 to $8 million would be the appropriate amount. And in Alaska, we also have a small and fairly dispersed population. So 98 cents was kind of brought up to kind of bring it to that correct amount to fund not just the 988 call line services, but also the other complementing services that go with that, such as the crisis response teams and stabilization centers.
Well, thank you for that. And now that makes a lot more sense to me, and I appreciate hearing those two numbers. I also read in these letters that it seems to me that we're shifting some costs too away from local communities who spend a lot of time on 911, right? You're now able to have experts in this area able to take up that call. So to me, we may be seeing some cost savings in other ways to the community. I don't know if that's part of these fiscal notes. I look forward to seeing that. If not, I'm going to ask about that because I think this is such a strong bill in that way as well. Let's see. I guess that was my primary question, was really around the dollar figure. And that sounds like you're very confident that this is going to achieve what the goal is of the bill, and that's to ensure that there's the services 724. Yeah.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, through the chair. Yes, that is true. And then I believe that Dennis, the vice president of the Anchorage Police Department, who is going to testify later, can speak more about the cost-saving measures.
So, okay, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, questions, Representative Staff, then Hannon, Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. This has got a lot of things. So first I'll ask about the FCC rules. So I'm pretty sure there's FCC regulations that you can't collect fees from other telephone users when they're basically outside the state. I see the language in the bill regarding wireless telephone. I'm hoping you can explain that to me a little bit through the chair.
Mr. Johnson?
So I unfortunately do not have an answer for you at the time, but by the time the next hearing, I will answer your question and I will note it duly. So okay. Thank you.
Call Mr. Kocher. Second question is, when I'm reading this language here, when you talk about 100 local exchange access lines from local exchange telephone company in the state is liable for behavioral health crisis services only on 100 local exchange access lines. It's on page 2, it's the first paragraph, bottom lines 4 through 7. I'm thinking about rural telephone providers like Bristol Bay Telephone Company and other type of people. Kind of seems like those are the only people who are going to be applicably applying this tax because 98 cents per line, it kind of adds up quick. So how are you going to be applying this to these local rural providers for telephone companies and ensuring at the same time you hit like the AT&Ts and all that type of stuff through the chair?
Mr. Johnson?
So once again, I'm not sure, but I will get you the answer by the time of the next hearing. I appreciate your question.
Okay. I follow Mr. Kocher.
Representative Scott.
Okay. I'll shift gears on the technical questions. I'll go simpler ones, I guess. Is this a dedicated fund? I see that there's language in the bill. That's the line 4. It says nothing. The section creates a dedicated fund. Therefore, now the fund is subject to appropriation. We're taking it for a purpose. So how's that going to work through the chair?
Mr. Johnson?
So through the chair to Representative Stapp, I would like to defer that question to Director of Behavioral Health, Director Carson. I believe she's in the room. She would come up to the chair.
Ms. Carson, I don't know if you may have the answer, but I think that's going to be more of a Alexi Painter or legal question, but you're welcome to come up and be available for questions, Ms. Carson, if you can put yourself on the record just in case, and if you could maybe just answer the question, even if you don't have an answer.
Yeah. Good morning. For the record, Jen Carson, Director of the Division of Behavioral Health. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I do not have the answer to that. That is not something that the Division of Behavioral Health manages.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, the reason I ask the question is because, you know, we have this great old vehicle rental tax fund, you know, that we appropriate for a bunch of other stuff. So I appreciate the intended purpose is due 988, and I don't see anything in the bill that would stop us from appropriating that money. I'm a little curious, though, regarding I know you had answered the 98 cents and you had determined it was sufficient to meet the need, but given the fact that not all the communities in the state have the financial capacity to kind of meet this, and 988 is a statewide program, right? It would appear to me that we're a little short on the dollars and cents, if that makes sense through the chair. No pun intended.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes. Okay. So through the chair to Representative Stapp, the number of 98 cents was seen as not just for the 988 call line, but also for kind of the surrounding services. I believe ANMC and the Providence Hospital in Anchorage are currently developing crisis stabilization centers. The $4 to $5 million for the 988 call line, the majority of the fund will go for the 988 call line, but then the rest that gets you to that $6 to $8 million target will go into those other kind of complementary services that not only assist the 988 call line, but kind of do many other things, because not every problem and crisis could be solved by a 988 call, but however most could, but it's for really those that cannot be just done by a 988 call.
Okay, follow
up.
Thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair. So why not just take the bill? So we have the 911 statute. Basically, 911 statutes allow municipalities the authority to kind of pay surcharges and administer these types of things. And from my thought, it's a little bit more conducive than trying to piggyback on a system that you don't control by adding different types of programs. So why not allow the municipalities by ordinance to be able to kind of do things they already do with the 911 through the chair?
Mr. Johnson?
So through the chair to Representative Stapp, not all communities have the financial capacity to do so, and this fund is for statewide services, and I believe the 988 call line operates at a state level through the Alaska Caroline people.
And what I think I'd like to do, I have a couple of folks I've got.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Stapp, I'm going to keep the queue here.
I'll defer. It's fine, Co-Chair.
Thank you. I've got Representative Stapp, Hannon, Josephson, and Bynum when we come back to questions later. But we do have three invited testifiers, and I hate to have them come back at a unknown time later. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into invited testimony, and then we'll come back to questions. Ms. Susanna Marchuk, looks like you're calling in from Fairbanks. Can you put yourself on the record and begin with your invited testimony?
Absolutely. This is Susanna Marchuk with the Alaska Caroline calling in from Fairbanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. So hello and good morning, members of the Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 138. Like I said, my name is Susanna Marchuk, and I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Caroline. Caroline is Alaska's 988 call center, and we have served as a frontline component of Alaska's crisis care system for more than 20 years. We provide a free, statewide 24/7 resource for Alaskans in crisis, offering immediate, compassionate support to those who need someone to talk to, and intervention for individuals contemplating suicide. As we all well know, Alaska is confronting a significant behavioral health crisis. While many states have experienced declines in opioid and suicide-related deaths in recent years, Alaska's rates have continued to rise. Caroline offers a unique resource to combat these devastating outcomes by providing access to life-saving support for Alaskans when they need it most. 98% of the contacts received at our Caroline Center are resolved within the call center. Each timely intervention by Caroline helps avert costly hospitalizations and mitigates unnecessary law enforcement involvement, reducing the strain on Alaska's broader healthcare and public safety system. Alaska's made great strides in building out our continuum of crisis care, and Caroline has been foundational to those efforts, with the crisis call center responding to over 50,000 contacts last year. As demand for crisis services continue to grow, the funding solution proposed in House Bill 138 comes at a pivotal moment for Alaska. Passage of HB 138 provides a sustainable funding solution for critical crisis response services, strengthening Alaska's behavioral health crisis response system and ensuring that no Alaskan faces a crisis alone. Thank you, members of the committee, for your time and consideration.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Susanna Marchuk. And just so folks know, this is invited testimony, and we do have three folks who are providing that. I'm going to jump right into the next two, and then we'll go to questions for our invited testifiers. The next person is Dennis Lasley calling in from Anchorage. If you can put yourself on the record, your name and your affiliation.
Dennis Lasley, the Vice President of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. As I said, my name is Dennis Lasley. I am the Vice President for the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I'm a 911 dispatch supervisor, as well as the chair for the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I bring over 17 years of experience in law enforcement, over 16 years of experience in behavioral health, and I'm speaking from both of those perspectives today. I'm here today in strong support of HB 138. From the dispatch console, I can tell you many of the calls that we receive are not crimes. They are people that are in behavioral health crisis. But because of the gaps that exist in our system, the default response is often a law enforcement response. And while our officers do an incredible job, it's not always the right or the correct tool for the situation. HB 138 matters because it creates something that we currently do not have, and that's a sustainable funding source. Right now, behavioral health crisis response in Alaska relies heavily on short-term grants and inconsistent funding streams. This makes it difficult, if not impossible, to build a system that communities can reasonably rely on. HB 138 changes that by creating a predictable funding source to support a statewide crisis response system that's built and designed to last. This bill is also about using the right resource for the right problem, and that's a resource that we know that works. Across the country, diversion models like the Crisis Now framework have shown that the majority of behavior health crisis calls can be safely handled without law enforcement involvement, often upwards to 70-80% of a successful diversion rate. That means that thousands of calls are resolved with care, not custody. It reduces unnecessary arrests, lowers emergency room utilization, and most importantly, it connects people to the help that they actually need. Another way that I like to look at this is more through the lens of a healthcare system. In physical health, we don't send every patient to an emergency room. The desire and the intent is to start with the lowest appropriate level of care and then escalate when necessary. And behavior health should be treated the exact same way. Right now, our system is inverted. We're often sending the highest level response, which is our law enforcement professionals, when a lower, more appropriate level of care would be more effective. HB 138 is designed to help correct that. It allows us to build a system where crisis lines, mobile crisis teams, and stabilization centers serve as that first appropriate point of care with law enforcement available if needed. And this isn't just better care, it's also more efficient. Every time we send an officer to a call that could be handled by a behavioral health team, we're pulling that officer away from responding to crimes and emergencies. Diversion will help strengthen public safety. It ensures that law enforcement resources are available where they are most needed, while behavioral health professionals handle those behavioral health crises. From my work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, I can tell you that Alaska continues to face some of, if not the highest rates of suicide in the nation. We can't continue to rely on a system that was not designed to meet this need. HB 138 is an opportunity to build something better. It's a system that's sustainable, a system that uses the right response at the right time, and a system that ultimately is going to save lives while strengthening our public safety. I urge you guys to support HB 138, and thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Lasley. We'll come back to questions for our testifiers in a moment. I'm just going to go to our last testifier, and that's Ms. Angela Kimball calling in from Happy Valley, Oregon. If you can put yourself on the record.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Angela Kimball with Inseparable, and I'm testifying in strong support of HB 138. This committee understands the value of 988 crisis services. Instead, the question before you today is whether a dedicated fee and phone bill is the right way to fund them. I believe it is, because crisis services require permanence. You cannot staff and maintain a 24/7 care line, mobile crisis teams, or crisis stabilization services, a response people depend on in their most desperate moments, with funding that relies on a grant cycle or disappears in a budget crunch. HB 138 provides stable funding, reliable year after year, using the same type of small phone bill fee used for 911, a dedicated funding stream for an essential crisis response system. More than a dozen states, including Oregon and Washington, fund 988 systems this way. And we know 988 works. A recent JAMA study found about 4,300 fewer suicides than projected among young people in just the first 2 years after the launch of 988. States with the greatest growth in 988 use saw the largest declines in suicide deaths, 18%. The more people can access crisis services, the more lives are saved, but only if those services are reliably there to answer. Some have suggested the Alaska Mental Health Trust should fund these services instead. The trust plays a vital role, but it operates through grants, and it supports many competing mental health needs. That's not a stable foundation or a lifeline. HB 138 provides exactly the reliable, dedicated funding a crisis system requires. I urge your support, and thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? We do have fiscal notes. I'm thinking while we've got our testifiers, we'll go ahead and come back to questions for them first, and then I've got the queue for questions for the sponsors. So if we have questions for the testifiers, Representative Hannon, then Bynum. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. My first question for Susan Marchuk with the Alaska Caroline Program, if she's still online.
She is.
And that is, and I hate to describe it this way, but 988 has been wildly successful. So I know that you've had to expand staffing and capacity. So can you tell me what your budget has been since the inception, and whether that growth is continued to anticipate growth?
Ms. Marchuk?
Yes, through the chair. That is a tough question, but one I will attempt to answer. Our budget has been about $2.7 million for the last 3 years. This year, we're about $2.8 million. And in part of that is that we actually anticipated out the gate that we were going to see this significant increase in call volume. And Alaska trended similar to national trends for 988 utilization. And it took about 18 months for that ramp up to really start to show us what it was going to look like. We have seen a threefold increase in utilization of 988 since its inception in July of 2022. We do see some stabilization at this point. It's difficult to forecast if that's, you know, going to stay true or hold true. But part of what I've heard in the testimony today and from the representative is that there is some, for lack of a better, more articulate word, like cushion in this funding solution that's presented so that they could absorb some additional growth if we find that we need to build in additional capacity.
Great. And
Representative Hannon?
Thank you. Ms. Marchuk, I know that initially when 988 was rolled out, I've been a legislative member on the state suicide council. Your staff didn't have much opportunity for your staff to have expanded training or wage increases. So your $2.7 million budget, I know that you've, like many programs, had staffing issues, and you are a 24/7, 365 operation. So even without expanded demand, if the demand is stabilized, could you see benefits for having the opportunity for a stable budget prediction to enhance your staff's ability to respond to calls, better training, and
Ms. Marchuk?
Yeah, through the chair. Absolutely. I think, you know, we, like many nonprofits, are continuously looking at our costs and trying to see where we can be less expensive, right? And so a stable funding solution would present an opportunity where maybe we could have access to some additional resources, and that could include making our wages slightly more competitive, accessing some additional training solutions or training opportunities. We've really been grateful for statewide partnerships where we've been able to leverage statewide experts to provide some training for our team around special populations to include the VA. And we work closely with many tribal partners across the state. So we've gotten creative, and also could we benefit from being able to increase our budget slightly so that we could access some additional opportunities. Certainly, we've just been trying to be really mindful of managing our costs in the current landscape that we're operating in.
Thank you, and thank you for championing and doing work that's so important and successful in its mission.
Okay, and we've got about two more minutes for our last question, and then we've got to head out. So, Representative Bynum?
That's all right, Co-Chair Foster. I was going to basically ask some questions with regard to mobile health units that we're seeing being developed in our municipalities and throughout the state, and how those have been augmented to support police and fire. But we don't have enough time in 2 minutes to really cover that topic, so I will defer that for another time and then save my questions for the program itself. Okay. When we bring this back.
And Representative Bynum, was that question going to be addressed to any specific invited testifier, in which case maybe we could ask them if they're willing to come back later?
No, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. It's something I can cover without the invited testifiers.
Okay. But
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, real good. So with that, unfortunately, we didn't make it to the fiscal notes. Appreciate you being here, Ms. Jen Carson. And so we'll come back to that later. And then I do have the queue, which is Representative Stapp, Hannon, Josephson, and Bynum for questions when we come back to the bill. And so, Mr. Johnson, thank you for presenting. And I'm going to recess in case there is any opportunity for us to come back before our 1:30 meeting. If we don't have time to come back, then of course this meeting will automatically be adjourned when we gavel into the next meeting. So with that, our next meeting is scheduled for 1:30, and at that meeting we will hear House Bill. We're supposed to hear the gas line bill. In all likelihood, it looks like we may not be hearing that, depending on what happens at a 1 o'clock rules meeting today. And so for sure we'll be taking up Senate Bill 104. That's the Vehicles and Boats Transfer and Death Title Bill. If we don't get to the prior bill, the fire station bill, before 1:30, we'll take that up at the top of the hour with this meeting, the 1:30 meeting, and then also we'll tack on any other bills that we can to fill up the time for the gas line if that ends up being the case. So do we have any questions before I adjourn? Seeing none. Representative Hannon, no?
No, I'll just ask Mr. Johnson.
Okay, with that, appreciate everyone's time, and we'll be adjourned at, or no, we will be recessed at 10:29 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.